Hey, gang. Welcome to National Bugle Radio. National Bugle Radio, this is Patrick Slattery. I'm having a little bit of a computer problem right now. We'll get it worked out. I'm on my backup system, my phone, but we're going to get the Skype going momentarily. Republic Broadcasting Network. This is RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. Lots of great stuff on RBN. We have a good show for you today. I would say it's a great show for you. I want to be playing a clip from the Tucker Carlson show last night. That was really great. I'm just trying to get hooked up properly with the network, but I'll be playing that for you.
I will be taking calls today. And that number is 1-800. Okay, are we back? We are back. Okay, now I've got my good Skype connection. I apologize for that. Just before going to show, just before showtime, I've been going through these websites, looking at these articles on this Antifa group that was at Charlottesville. And, you know, I don't know if it was Fox News or what. One of these websites I went to just caused chaos, havoc on my computer. And there you go. Everything crashed. But we are back, and we're going now. So I'll get to the Charlottesville thing later in the show, unless it gets postponed till next week because of all the calls that I might be getting on the first thing I want to do. But the first thing I want to present to you was, you know, there's these ongoing shakeups in the Trump White House. Gary Cohn is gone. And there are rumors of who might succeed him. There's been rumors of Lawrence Summers, which would be absolutely horrible. But, of course, Lawrence Summers had that job, that same job as chief economic advisor under Obama. That would be a disaster. I don't think that's going to happen. There's talk of Larry Kudlow, who is a fixture on CNBC. He used to be an economist with Bear Stearns, but he had a $10,000 a month cocaine habit that he's admitted to that got him fired from his job, but it also turned him away from the Judaism that he was born with and towards Roman Catholicism, because I guess only Jesus could help him with overcome his addiction. I tell you one thing, if it's a choice between Lawrence Summers and Larry Kudlow, I would take Kudlow any day of the week, but that's not who I wanted to talk about. There's also talk that H.R. McMaster, the National Security Advisor, is on his way out. Now, both of these positions we're talking about, these are White House positions, and they don't take Senate confirmation. They don't require Senate confirmation. So basically, Trump could hire anybody he wanted. And President Trump, if you're listening, I'm available. I think RBN would allow me a leave of absence if I were to go over to the White House. Not expecting a call, but I'm just saying. But one name that has been talked about, and apparently this person even visited the White House, is the former ambassador to the United Nations, John Bolton. Neocon Central, the neocon's favorite goy. Although I think he's an eighth Jewish or something, but I think he's a goy by most definitions. That would be really alarming. He was he was such a horrible neocon. He was in the Bush administration, of course. And just trying to see if I got that. Yeah, and he was on Tucker Carlson last night. Now, Tucker Carlson brought him on and noted that he was a fixture on Fox News and then proceeded to have an interview with him. Now, if you're familiar with Tucker Carlson's shtick, Tucker Carlson invites on typically a lot of crazy leftists, talks to them, and makes them look completely crazy. He did the same thing to John Bolton. This is about 6 minutes long, but I think it is well worth a listen. Mr. T and I were listening last night. We recorded it, and are you ready with that, Mr. T? Okay, let's take a listen.
Great to see you. You too, Tucker. Former U.N. Ambassador John Bolton just visited the White House. What does he believe are the greatest threats facing America? He joins us next. A frequent fixture here on Fox was at the White House yesterday for a personal meeting with the President of the United States. News reports, a lot of them suggest he could be the next National Security Advisor. So the following question is more relevant than ever. What does Ambassador Bolton think is the greatest threat to America today? Ambassador Bolton joins us tonight. Great to see you, Ambassador.
Glad to be here.
So it feels like we're moving kind of in slow motion toward a conflict with Iran and Russia in Syria. Do you think we are?
Well, I think that's one possibility. I think the Iranians have clearly gamed what they plan to do after the defeat of the ISIS territorial caliphate.
Yes.
I think they were thinking of it when our strategists were not thinking of it, and we're now suffering the consequences with Iran literally on Israel's border, flying drones into Israeli airspace. I don't think that's the really most dangerous aspect of the Middle East, though. I still think it's Iran's support for terrorism and its continued effort to get deliverable nuclear weapons.
Right. So obviously Iran was greatly empowered by the fall of Saddam. I think we, in retrospect, we can concede that. There haven't been any Iran-sponsored terror attacks in this country that I'm aware of in the last 25 years. There have, of course, been many, many, many sponsored by Saudi Arabians and the Gulf states and the Sunni Arab world. So why should we see Iran as our primary threat?
Because Iran, for many decades, has been the world's central banker of international terrorism, funding Shia, Sunni terrorists on an equal opportunity basis, providing arms to them as they do to Hamas in the Gaza Strip. So it's their support for terrorism generally that should concern us, not necessarily specific attacks in the United States.
But, in order to, commit American troops and the billions it takes to prosecute any kind of conflict, wouldn't you want to go after the people who are attacking us here first?
Yeah. Well, nobody's talking about committing massive amounts of troops. What we have to worry about, I think, most importantly, is the threat of North Korea's nuclear weapons program, which is more advanced than Iran's. But it all ties together in the Middle East. You may have seen reports recently of a UN inspector's study of North Korea selling chemical weapons, precursor chemicals, and equipment to manufacture chemical weapons to Syria,
right,
likely financed by Iran. So there's a palpable threat of weapons of mass destruction, something President Trump acted against earlier in his term, that the North Koreans have brought into the Middle East with Iran's participation.
I believe that they're all bad places. Though in 2015, you wrote a piece for the New York Times saying we ought to bomb Iran in order to stop their weapons program.
That's not quite what I said. That's what the New York Times headline said.
Right. Well, how I read it anyway.
They write the headlines and the op-ed writer.
Right, but I don't think that's the only time you call for conflict, armed conflict with Iran. But if we had done that then, where do you think we'd be now?
Well, I think Israel could have done it 15 years before and we'd be in a much better place, as Israel itself and the United States are in a better place today for Israel having bombed Saddam Hussein's nuclear reactor in 1981. And for Israel having bombed the reactor that North Korea was building in Syria in September of 2007.
So you've called for regime change in Iraq, Libya, Iran, and Syria. In the first two countries, we've had regime change, and obviously it's been
I'd say disaster. I think
I don't agree with that. And let me.
You don't think it's been a disaster?
No, because to argue that, you have to argue, let's just take Iraq to begin with, you have to argue that everything that followed from the fall of Saddam Hussein followed inevitably, solely, and unalterably from the decision to overthrow him. And that's simply not
true. I would never argue that. I'm merely arguing the macro picture, since you just said that Iran is the single greatest threat to us and to that region. I think you'll concede that Saddam was the greatest counterbalance to Iran, and they were empowered by his fall. So I think it's fair to say, if you think Iran is the real threat that way, you know, it's kind of hard to defend that decision, right?
No, because I think your analysis is simple-minded, frankly.
Okay.
The Iranian threat, which stems from the revolution of 1979, was underway quite apart from what Saddam Hussein was doing. The Iranians have been trying to get nuclear weapons for 25 years.
You don't think the Saddam Hussein made Iran stronger?
I think it made the fall of Saddam, no, did not make Iran stronger. What made Iran stronger, ultimately, was the withdrawal of American forces in 2011.
So if you, I mean, I'm not saying you're the only person who thinks that. You're the only person I've met who thinks that. What would you say if you could sum up the one lesson from what has happened in Iraq? What would it be?
Well, I think the overthrow of Saddam Hussein, that military action, was a resounding success. I think the mistakes that were made subsequently, setting up the Coalition Provisional Authority and others that followed from it, are lessons about what to do after a regime is overthrown. But I'd also point out, because of President Bush's surge policy, when his administration ended, stability had returned to Iraq. It was not a place you'd go for vacation.
Right.
But he turned it over to Barack Obama, and it fell apart subsequently. And the point I think you need to understand is that life is complicated in the Middle East. And when you say, well, the overthrow of Saddam Hussein was a mistake, is simplistic.
I would argue that I'm the one who understands how complicated it is, but just my view.
It's your long experience in foreign policy.
Better record than yours, I would say. But thank you, Professor. That's true. There's new information about failures by
Okay. We had a good time listening to that. Oh, my gosh. So there you had Bolton. How many times did he invoke Israel? That now Iran is literally on the doorstep of Israel, flying drones into Israeli airspace. Oh, we are so much better off. We are so much better off that Israel bombed Iraq's nuclear plant and this supposed, alleged, not really, nuclear plant that North Korea was building for Syria. Oh, we're so much better off. I'll tell you, we'd be a lot better off if back in the 1960s we had bombed the Dimona nuclear plant that France built for Israel in the Negev Desert. Wouldn't we be better off for that? I think we would be. We could have done it. Anyway, then he goes on. When Tucker Carlson points out that I think in retrospect we can see that the invasion of Iraq was a disaster, Bolton counters, and this is kind of like, this is, reminds me of Halsey English in the debate with Mark Collette. He says, no, to argue that you would have to say everything that followed from the invasion, you know, everything followed inevitably, solely, and inalterably. Okay, so John Bolton has just said three words. There's no why to say that the invasion was a disaster. Do you have to say that everything that followed from that followed inevitably, solely, and inalterably? You don't. It's so stupid. It was a disaster. You just look at the results. You had an invasion before you had the invasion. You had a relatively stable society, even though it was. You know, you had a lot of infant mortality and infant death because of the sanctions, which devastated the water purification systems. And so everybody was dying, all these babies, half a million babies dying of diarrhea and other avoidable diseases. It was bad then, but, you know, what happened afterwards? Yes, it was a direct result of the invasion. Let's go to Jeremy. Jeremy in Kentucky, welcome to the show.
Hey, good afternoon, Dr. Slattery.
Good afternoon, Jeremy. You're loud and clear.
Yeah, you know, excellent. You know, I'm thinking maybe we should run Michael Bolton for a security advisor instead of John Bolton. What do you think about that?
Yeah. I mean, Dr. Duke inadvertently said Michael Bolton. I think Michael Bolton would be a lot better.
I mean, Michael Bolton's a Jew, and I go straight to Jew or not Jew, and John Bolton is declared barely a Jew. Apparently, he's got 1/8.
I think I've seen that 1/8. I think he's about 1/8. But that's kind of the amazing thing is you see these people who are 1/4, 1/8 Jewish. David Cameron, the Prime Minister of Britain, was 1/8 Jewish. Although the family fortune came from that Jewish side, so maybe he has to show some appreciation. Sarkozy, the President of France, it might have been more, but he was supposedly a quarter Jewish. You know, his Hungarian side, it was his father Hungarian, and I guess he had a Jewish grandfather on that side, but of course his mother was Greek, and a lot of the Greeks who left Greece came from Salonika and were actually Jews, so he might have been more than a quarter Jewish. But these people with even just a little bit of Jewish ancestry will somehow relate very, very strongly to that small amount of Jewish ancestry. It's not universal, but you do find that. It's always puzzled me. What's on your mind, Jeremy?
Well, I was just going to discuss that Tucker versus Bolton interview. I thought it was one of Tucker's best moments, as I heard you did. Mm. And I think it's moved the window over, the good old Overton window, because now, you know, there's a lot of mainstream conservatives that follow Tucker. Now it's becoming mainstream to question the Middle Eastern wars and Fox Jews and Friends and all of their Mo Wars for Israel memes. We can now question that openly, and I think that was a good thing last night. And I'm thinking that Tucker's one of our guys. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm thinking Tucker Carlson 2024. I think he's number 46. That's what I'm thinking.
I would say to that, Tucker VP, LaPierre maybe run for president in 2024.
Yeah, Wayne LaPierre, he's not anti-Semitic. He's anti-European style socialism. I love that European style socialist meme that he started. That is great.
Yeah, we've kind of taken off with that, and I still think we should take off with the meme Michael Bolton for security advisor. Let's keep that meme going, because if we're going to have a Jew in there, let's at least have one that can sing, you know?
Yeah.
What I'm talking about.
That's right. He can sing.
But a lot of windows have been moved over. I just heard Rush today talking about the California incident here. You remember you and I talking about how the California incident with them standing against the federal government is reminiscent or comparable to the Civil War and states' mm-hmm. rights? Well, Rush just made that case today. I think he listens to your program.
I don't know but he ought to. If he doesn't, he ought to. He ought to listen
but
to our.
He was basically, now you're a white supremacist if you want to enforce laws that have been on the books for decades. So there's a window that's moved over. So now a lot of regular conservatives are going to say, "Well, I guess I'm a white supremacist then, because I just want to enforce immigration laws." These people
Listen,
really
we're about to go
themselves.
To the break, but if you can hang on, please hang on until after the break.
Okay.
An ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce. Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality. There is an ongoing war right here in America. Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Okay, welcome back to the show. Patrick Slattery on National Bugle Radio with Jeremy from Kentucky. And we were talking about Tucker's interview with John Bolton last night.
Yeah. Do you have any... I think Snoopy was saying hi to Mr. T. I don't know if you heard that.
Oh, well, I was watching that show last night, and when Tucker said that at the end, well, my record's better than yours, I was so excited. It was as if my team had just won the Super Bowl, though nowadays I wouldn't even care about that. But then I went back and recorded it, and even the second time when I recorded it, I still couldn't control myself. It was just, I couldn't believe he said that. It was amazing.
That was total burn, wasn't it?
It was. I mean, and yeah, just the way he treats the leftists, the crazy leftists he had, he gave them the exact same treatment.
That he deserves, man. And you know, this whole thing with the war with Iran, this goes back to 1979. When Iran got rid of its central bank, that's the underlying issue. That central bank, everybody can look this up if you research it. It was started by, I believe it was the same Jew that started Reuters. And they got rid of their central bank when they changed governments in 79, the revolution. And then all of a sudden, it all became about war with Iran. That Israel bomb, or no, I'm sorry, we began to supply Saddam Hussein with weaponry to fight against Iran, and then of course Russia backed Iran, so they had all that going on. But I think that's the underlying issue.
Before the revolution, of course, the Shah was very, very close to the United States. I recall in the 1970s when Kissinger was Secretary of State, I don't know if it was under Nixon or under Ford, but he traveled to Iran and was at a welcoming reception. He was being welcomed by the Shah of Iran. And he made some comment, like, every time that the United States and Iran, or the United States and the Shah, every time we have a disagreement, it's always the United States that's wrong and the Shah is right. He said something like that. That's how close. I mean, it was almost like, you know, the Israeli best friends forever, Bibi Netanyahu, he's so wonderful, couldn't he be our president? They fawned over the Shah the same way. And, you know, the United States was helping the Shah build a nuclear reactor. And, right. And of course, at that, Saddam Hussein took over Iraq sometime in the late 1970s. I think his cousin had been the big power beforehand, but he took over through, you know, palace revolts, coup d'etat, and was initially backed by the Soviets, and then things switched after the revolution. And of course, the big thing during the revolution was these students who took over the United States Embassy and held, how many people was it, 150 people as hostages, basically, for 400, well, maybe it was 50 people for 444 days. It was initially a large number. They let the women and, I don't know, maybe minorities leave. Now, the logic for, which a lot of people probably aren't aware of, the logic for taking over the embassy was in 1953, when Prime Minister Mossadegh, the nationalist prime minister of Iran, when he had more or less, well, when he had nationalized the oil industry, and the Shah had left, gone more or less into exile, the CIA, through its agents who were housed in the embassy, who were working out of the embassy, and they were, it was not Elliot Roosevelt, Roosevelt, Kermit Roosevelt, who was the grandson of Theodore Roosevelt, and Norman Schwarzkopf Sr., who was the father of Stormin Norman of Gulf War fame. They organized this, you know, just like the, you know, George Soros and the Jews organized these riots in our cities, you know, the Black Lives Matter and Antifa riots. Kermit Roosevelt and company and the CIA organized these demonstrations and riots and strikes. And that's what brought down Mossadegh. And the Shah came back, and he had been a constitutional monarch under Mossadegh, but he became a absolute monarch after Mossadegh was deposed. And so that was the rationale, was we've seen this before, where the United States thwarted our own movement, our own democracy, our own self-rule out of the embassy. We're not going to let them do it again. That was the rationale for it. Right. I don't know. Were you aware of that? I mean, because you're aware of a lot of things. And the central bank issue, I'm not as familiar with. But were you aware of that motive for taking over the embassy?
No, you actually educated me today, and I learn a lot, and I can remember a lot, but there's so much more that I don't know, and as someone who have lived through that and remembers it, I mean, I'm sure you have detailed...
Well, I remember that, but I'm not... If you can hang on a little bit longer, I would appreciate it if you'd tell us a little bit about the central bank of Iran. Okay, we'll be back after the break.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech. Quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AirOutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2, keep it today.
Welcome back, and my beat on. This is National Bugle Radio with Patrick Slattery, and we still have Jeremy from Kentucky. We're taking calls today. We have a couple more callers waiting. But, Jeremy, I wanted to hear what you had about the Iranian National Bank or Central Bank. Can you tell us that information?
Yeah, I'll nutshell it for you, and I'll throw out some key phrases so people can look this up for themselves. If you look up the modern era of banking in Iran, in 1889, you had the establishment of the Imperial Bank of Persia, okay? And then it was established actually in 1885 with concession from the government of Persia to Baron Julius D. Reuter. So there's your Jewish setup right there, Reuters. And then that bank went through a transformation in 1960. And then in 79, Iran nationalized their bank. But in 1960, it was called the Central Bank of Iran. Okay. But once they, once the government changed in the revolution, they nationalized that, in the Islamic interest-free basis. It was to be run on an Islamic interest-free basis. We can't have interest-free, Goy. I mean, come on. So, I mean, you can kind of look that up and start connecting the dots and kind of see maybe why, you know, we turn on Iran all of a sudden.
Okay, well, that's very interesting. I will look into that. John Stadtmiller tends to be very much on top of these central banking issues. So, okay, I'll look into that.
Thanks, Dr. Slattery, and with that, I will say Bolton for security advisor.
But Michael Bolton. Michael. What were you playing? What was that that you were playing?
This is Michael Bolton, our new security advisor. All right, I'm out.
Okay, he's a good singer. Not quite as good as John Ashcroft, though. All right, let us go now to Francis. Francis from North Carolina, welcome to the show.
Hey, youngin. One, I have to make an interesting comment that I find that for your music going in or out or whatever, has a Mediterranean sound to it, or Middle Eastern sound to it, first off.
That's
Secondly,
Hava Nagila. It's a very famous Jewish song.
That's but what now? It's
Hava Nagila. It's a very famous Jewish song. It's the most famous Jewish song, but there's no copyright on it, so,
okay.
So I can play it.
I wasn't going to go into that much detail. Now, I do have a question to pose to you, though. Mm-hmm. I hear the ads regarding foods that are kosher or mm-hmm. illicit or whatever compared to other types of certification and so forth. My question is this: how does kosher add up or compared to organic, and what are the standards of how there's a difference between? Because obviously, for organic, they have to make sure that the seed stock is free of genetic engineering or modification. The question is, how does kosher deal with that issue, or is there? Well,
I mean, kosher's not really about what's good for you and what's bad for you. You can look at everything, all the junk food in the supermarket that's bad for you, and you'll still find it's kosher certified, right? So, you know, you're the candy, the soda pop, all the stuff. So it has nothing to do with health issues. It just has to do with whether the preparation of it meets the dietary codes laid down in the Old Testament, and in many cases requires a rabbi to be present. You know, for instance, if anything is going to be containing meat products, these animals have to be slaughtered in a way that is kosher. If you want better information, more complete information, the app's only $1.99, so there's
True.
You don't have
well,
much to lose.
Well, there's that. Well, in that case, I'd be wondering how would someone that, like a rabbi, would deal with a vegetable that happens to have, shall we say, pig genes crossed with it genetically. Would they still view it the same or differently?
That's a little bit above my pay scale. I would think that they, I would think that they should object to that, but I don't know. I mean, genetic engineering wasn't a thing at the time that they wrote the Old Testament, so who knows?
Curious, most curious. Well, you've been very insightful at the moment. Thanks so much. Have a great one.
Hey, thank you for your call. Okay, let's see. We have a first-time caller, a new caller to the show. That would be Ken from Baltimore. Ken, welcome to the show. Ken? Have we lost Ken from Baltimore, our first-time caller, brand new to the show? Oh, well, maybe he'll call back. Okay, so, I'm left to my own devices again, and as I said, I've been looking into Charlottesville. Some new information came to light, to me at least, over the past 24 hours and this morning. Maybe next week I'll prepare a show specifically on this, but I was listening to The Daily Shoah. It's a podcast on... what is the rightstuff.biz, and deep into the podcast, they started talking about this professor, this Antifa professor, Oh, what is his name? I've got pictures of him here. His name, here's his picture, is Dwayne Dixon. He's apparently a professor or faculty member. I guess they say he is a UNC Chapel Hill anthropology lecturer. So a lecturer, maybe that's not the same rank as professor at UNC Chapel Hill. UNC Chapel Hill, by the way, is one of the best public schools in the United States. I mean, it's a state school. It's a public school. And so Dwayne Dixon, he is a member, or in fact, probably a leader, but certainly a prominent member of Redneck Revolt, which is an Antifa or Antifa-aligned militia group. They're armed to the teeth. Let me tell you, they're armed to the teeth. And they have, I'm in the process of posting on nationalbugle.com. So go to nationalbugle.com in about half an hour or so, and you'll see all the articles about him. There's articles from Fox News, but there's also Redneck Revolt has their own website. And, you know, they show him. He was at Charlottesville, and he had a AR, what is it, AR-15, a semi-automatic weapon. And so they have pictures of him. He's on his own Twitter or whatever. He's posted this picture of him standing with his weapon. And then there's also what they played on the Daily Show was him talking and claiming to have just minutes before the fatal car crash, having pointed his weapon at James Field. This is what he claimed to have done. Now, we know from other video evidence that James Field's car was a second or two before going into the crowd. An Antifa person swung a flagpole at the back of his car as he was slowly going down the street. You have to be going down slowly for somebody to hit the back of your car with a pole, right? Unless you're maybe a Major League Baseball player with perfect timing, the car would have to be going pretty slow. That's what the proximate cause of him stepping on the accelerator and accelerating into the crowd. But of course, he already had a smashed windshield, and now it is perfectly clear that he had been accosted by a hostile Antifa leftist who pointed a gun at him, who pointed a semi-automatic rifle at him. And, you know, the funny thing is, when this Dwayne Dixon was making the comments, when he was saying this, there's video of him saying this. When he was making his comments, he was saying, well, he wasn't sure if the guy was a white nationalist or an undercover policeman. so he thought the guy might be a policeman, so he pointed his weapon at the guy? I mean, come on. Now, I was in that park. Dwayne Dixon was in what used to be called Jefferson Park. Now it's called Justice Park. Well, I was there after the crash, maybe 15, 20 minutes after the crash, and I actually have pictures of him that I took. It wasn't until now, 7 months later, that I mean, when I was in the park, I thought these people were Antifa or Antifa-aligned, but then later on in the day when I was milling around in the Black Lives Matter crowd, I talked to a reporter, and the reporter had interviewed the leader of some Pennsylvania militia. And so I thought, oh, well, maybe that's who they were. They were a Pennsylvania militia, 3%ers. But no, now it's perfectly clear, because I can match the photographs up. It's perfectly clear that this was the Redneck Revolt, Antifa-aligned militia group, Redneck Revolt. The Redneck Revolt had this guy Dwayne Dixon had pointed his weapon at James Field a minute or so before the accident. James Field was completely freaked out. And there is apparently video that is not published yet, but that the courts have, that I guess the lawyers have, that shows this, brandishing of the weapon on James Field. So this James Field guy is going to walk. There's no way he'll be convicted. Okay, let's see. Who is next? We have Mike from Kentucky. Mike, welcome to the show.
I've been milling around here listening to you while you're, talking, and I came back in just in time to hear you talking about that there wasn't genetic engineering in the Old Testament or something.
Not the kind of gene splicing we have nowadays.
Yeah, I just, there's a lot of stuff in the Bible that's hard to take literally versus figuratively, and it's fun to try to rightly divide that sometimes. But in Ecclesiastes, if you've read it, you probably know the verse I'm talking about. All things are wearisome. Man is not able to tell it. And it goes on, and that which has been is that which will be, and that which has been done is that which will be done, so there is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything which one might say, see, this is new, already it has existed for ages which were before us? And I've looked at, you look at the different analysis for the book of Genesis, and obviously you've got like the Kent Hovind crowd, which has assembled a lot of compelling proof that man, in some form or another, humans existed with dinosaurs. There's just too much evidence to look at with these ancient artifacts that go across the world from Australia to Central America, and some cultural cues that point toward there had to have been a much smaller planet and a much much more connection between some of these cultures. Look at some of it and say, well, that's just a coincidence. But as he points out, there's things that they shouldn't know what they existed as if they were 60 million years ago, like the skin on a triceratops. A triceratops is depicted having a rider on its back with a spear chucker. And there's two different cultures that depict a plesiosaur, if you studied the Loch Ness Monster legend. Loch Ness Monster is thought by some to have been a plesiosaur. There's two different depictions in ancient art from Australia and I think Central America that shows a plesiosaur having ate somebody, and there's a surrounded by spear chuckers trying to kill it because it's ate their friend. So the idea that humans always had a soul, after Adamic man, it was like Adam was a new creation or whatever in the Garden of Eden and had a living soul. He was breathed into him the image. I've read and heard some, I can't remember if it was Kurt, some of these what we call Messianic Jews that I think they mix in with some of the Jewish mysticism that they may know about, that us, we, that just goes by the sola scriptura of the, what's in there. If it says it says it. If it doesn't, it doesn't. Scripture alone in the Martin Luther school of thought. But I think when some of these Messianic Jews come in, they bring in some of their, Talmudic or Jewish mysticism that they've learned. But there's a school of thought that says that the people that there was another flood before Garden of Eden, that the earth was covered with water prior to Noah's flood, and that those spirits are where demons come from, and the link there. Kurt Landry, I think, is one of the guys that I've heard speak on this.
we're about to come up on the break, but
yeah.
And I do have another caller I need to get to.
Okay, sure.
You know, a lot of the dinosaur stuff, dinosaurs and human stuff, to me seems far-fetched. But on the other hand, the idea of the flood, I mean, there is a scientific theory that, at some point, the Black Sea Basin, which had been dry during the Ice Ages, an ice dam would have broken and water would have flooded into it. That would have been an event that humans would have passed on in oral tradition for sure. So who knows? Who knows? Thank you for your call, Mike. We'll be back after the break.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
For the past 14 years, it's been my privilege to host the National Intel Report on RBN, to offer a platform to interview exceptional guests, to provoke critical thought, and examine evidence, whether real, fake, or somewhere in between, and allow our audience to call in and participate with your input and questions, in order to help us all reach an educated decision and arrive at our own truth. Our world has changed. It's now been turned on its head. Real is now considered fake, and mainstream fake is now pushed as real, rather than any clear thinking, consensus, or rationale.
Those few remaining beacons of light, the ones still shining through the mainstream media lies, propaganda, and deception, are being viciously attacked at every level through attempts at censorship, threatening advertisers, jailing hosts, and even killing journalists brave enough to speak the truth to you. We are in a war for our very freedom and existence, and through these despicable acts, freedom haters, collectivists, and communitarians have shown they will stop at nothing to blot out these last few beacons of light. Truth is becoming increasingly more difficult to unmask, just as the term unmasking itself is spoken by those usually anonymous sources. They promote their lies, wishing to mask the truths by ignoring it, vilifying it, or conspiratorializing it into a black hole abyss.
Regrettably, RBN has reached the tipping point, and through internal audit and actuarial review, it has now been determined that the only life raft of survival to this network is to go the way of PBS, that being audience supported. Like a cornered animal, the left with veracity is pulling out all the stops with every effort to effectively blacken our beacon forever. Help us, folks. Help yourselves. Don't let our light stop shining. Our motto has always been, because you can handle the truth. It's time to review your budget, folks. If you want the truth to keep flowing through RBN, go to republicbroadcasting.org and become a regular monthly donor of $30, $40, $50, or $100 or more a month and ensure you keep the truth.
But a couple of callers, let's see if we can get to them both. Kim in New Jersey. Kim, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You were talking about James Fields, the whole Charlottesville thing. Mm-hmm. Something that was very interesting at the time, and I'm sure other people caught it as well, his license tag. Okay. There was an interview, so you would have to take note of his license tag. There was an interview with his mother in her garage in a whole nother state.
Mm-hmm.
When the camera panned a certain way, you could see her license tag. It was one digit off. Now, when you take those license tag numbers and put them in the calculator, it translates from Hebrew or something. It's called a geriatric now. Geriatric calculator. People know what it is. I can spell it, but I can't say it. It's messages, and it's chilling. And it was so long ago, I don't have the information anymore. And I'm going to go back on and check it out again.
Okay, well, when you go check it out, you know, you can call in a future show and tell us all about it.
Thanks. Thanks so much, Patrick. But if anybody else wants to check it out, look at their license tags.
Okay, thanks, Kim. Okay, next we will go to Nancy in California. Nancy, welcome to the show.
Oh, I just wanted to say to Mike that I really appreciated his comments, and I've watched Kent Hovind's videos, and I've studied. I'll tell you something. Have you ever heard of, there was an article, I think it was in Discover magazine, and it was about this lady, Schwartz's Dangerous Discovery, I think is what the title was. But she was not just a paleontologist. Before she was a paleontologist, she had been in one of the other sciences, and she was on a dig, and she smelled organic. She could smell the basically death. And upon further discovery, found that they had red blood cells in this, I think it was a femur of a T-Rex or something. You can find the article. It was fascinating. And they were trying to figure out how in the world, if it was really millions of years old, it could be such fresh, basically, fresh meat. It wasn't meat, but it was cells that they found. So I think Mike is right on, and I wouldn't be surprised. In fact, even if you believe in the Bible, in Job, they describe believe it was a brontosaurus. So hope Mike doesn't get discouraged from sharing his information, because I find it fascinating.
Okay, well, thanks a lot. We're coming up on the end of the show. I was talking a little bit about the possible sudden flooding of the what is now the Black Sea, which would have been dry land during the Ice Age, and that would have been an event of biblical proportions. It's the type of thing that would have happened thousands of years before the Bible was written, but it's the type of thing that if you had been in the Black Sea area, an area the size of California, and then suddenly the whole thing just fills up with water, wow. Talk about a flood legend that would last for eons. So you never know. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yep, there's a lot to learn. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much for your call, Nancy. And we will be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.